All right, Oxen Killer with Sacrifice. I believe we got the band on the line right now. Let's connect them and get this interview going. Rob, this is Mike. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Is everybody there with you, or are you calling in on your own?
I'm just here on my own. Is there another, maybe another line somebody's trying to call in on? I think the other guys
are... No, here we go now. Everybody's starting to come in. Hang on.
This is Sandy.
Sandy, how are you? Mike, Rob is on the line already.
Okay, cool.
All right, we got you guys here now. I think we're waiting for Rick. We'll get started, I guess, waiting for Rick to call in. Listen, I'm a fan of you guys going back to the days. I think it was like 1983. I was a kid trading demo tapes, and somebody sent me a copy of that first three-song demo you guys put out. And I was such a big fan. But back then, no internet. Nobody knew what was going on, what was happening with the bands, where they came from. There was very little information.
Yeah, we were lucky enough to be friends with Ron Singer, who was doing some tape trading. And actually, maybe I can let Sandy fill you in more on that.
We met Ron and Gerald at I think a record store in Vancouver, and we ended up becoming friends with them. And basically, when we were doing demos, they sort of taught us how to you know, mail into magazines and, you know, get our demo reviewed in like Metal Forces and Onfer and some of the European mags. And there was a few in North America, I think Heavy Metal Report out of California or something, and then a few others. And then those guys were trading tapes with people all over the world. And they were kind of like the Napster of cassette tapes back then.
Absolutely. Rick is on the line right now. Rick, everybody else is here. How you doing?
Sorry, I'm late. Good.
No, you're not late. It's perfect timing.
Oh, okay. Awesome.
We were just talking about the early days of the band and, you know, demo tape trading and how a lot of the things for the band got out. So let's go back. How did the band all come about? Because you three guys are the main three guys, you know, from the beginning. There were a lot of lineups, a lot of members came and went throughout the years. You need a scorecard to keep track of that. But you were the three core members of the group from the beginning.
Rick, you want to take that?
Oh, boy, yeah, definitely. It's like a scorecard for sure. I think it started Rod and Rob jamming together, and I was jamming with another guy named Lewis, and then we kind of got together, and Rod switched from drums to bass, and Sandy was in. So it was only natural. We all liked the same kind of music and kind of just went from there.
Yeah. Well, you know, 1983, I guess, is when it all came about and when it all started. And that was still very early on in the stages of heavy metal, at least here in the U.S. You know, the new wave of British heavy metal already taken off. Bands like Metallica and Slayer and Queensryche were just getting started and putting out their first records or EPs. I mean, how was the scene in British Columbia at that time?
It was pretty weak for the most part.
Yeah, there wasn't that many bands. There was a few in Vancouver, like for Sacred Blade. And there was another band called Black Knight that were fairly popular around here, but there wasn't too many bands back in those early days that you know, that we really knew, except for those few that I just mentioned.
And yeah. Cradle came out a little bit later.
Did that make it harder that there really wasn't a vibrant scene, either like to draw members or musicians with, or other bands to kind of, you know, sync up with and, you know, go out there and play shows with, or clubs and just like a happening scene? Did that make it more difficult for a band?
Well, it's Rick. Yeah, I think so. You know, what I remember is lots of smaller underground stuff, like definitely nothing that anyone outside of a very small number of true fans would know about. Like there wasn't that many venues for sure, but I remember going to gigs in, like, you know, people's basements, and there'd be like 60 people there and stuff like that. But I think a lack of venues maybe, and certainly just like everywhere, never really got any airplay. So unless you were doing the tape scene and all that, you didn't really know, you wouldn't be exposed to it.
True. I noticed three on the line, so nobody knows who to answer what questions. So I'll give you one at a time. I'll go through all of you one at a time to make it easier for you. So, Rob, I mean, you know, I think the band, what, maybe 2 to 3 years, it kind of existed in the earlier stages?
Yeah, we were basically officially together in 83. We did some recording and it wasn't until about 84 that we started playing a few places, and I mean a few. It wasn't that many. The majority of the recording was all done in 84, and then the band carried over into 85, but I was out of it by that time, and again, members did change. That's also when the Speed Metal Hell album came out. That was 85. Sandy was instrumental in setting that up, I believe.
Yeah. Well, Sandy, you're talking about the recordings in 84. You actually did record a lot of music in that short time period.
Yeah, I look back at it. It's kind of crazy how much we actually did record back then. The Speed Metal Hell thing, it came about, I think they sent us something or we saw something about it. I can't remember exactly how that came about. We submitted a song to get onto that, and then they really liked the tune and selected us as one of the bands. And then they actually offered us a one album deal after that, but the band was pretty much had splintered apart at that point, so we didn't really get to capitalize on doing the album deal that they offered us, which was kind of unfortunate.
Definitely. Well, New Renaissance Record, I believe that was Anne Boleyn's label from Helium back in the day. Did you actually deal with her personally?
It was just through like physical mail. Like, and I don't think I ever talked to her on the phone. It was just, through mail and I think maybe fax, something like that.
Telegram.
Yeah.
Very old school.
Yeah. Yeah. You had to send smoke signals up back then to get a message out.
Yeah, I mean, everything back then was like, mailing things and and just kind of hoping for the best.
I know. Well, Rick, I mean, you have all these songs recorded now, and like Rob said earlier, not long after that, I guess, he was out of the band, and then the band kind of splintered apart before anything could happen with an album coming out. I mean, what happened? Was it just like the change of members, the scene not happening, nothing going on? What caused the band to kind of fall apart and break up at that point?
Yeah, it's probably, I'm trying to remember, a combination of things. That age, pretty volatile, and I think I ended up going to school. There just wasn't enough time, I think. And it was kind of hard to sustain, used to having more members, and it was down to me, Sandy, and Rod, and trying to come up with, keep up the pace with the volume of material was kind of difficult.
I think we never had really a stable singer was kind of an issue too that kind of threw a wrench into things where it seemed like we were always having a different singer, every couple of months or something.
Did that affect the writing in the band or the way you had to write for different singers all the time? Or did you guys just write and hope that whoever came in could kind of recreate what somebody did before them? Because Sandy sang, other people sang in the band.
Yeah, we just kind of wung it, I think. It was, we didn't really, I don't think we all, as far as I can recall, we didn't really alter our style when we were writing back then. But, it definitely helped. I think Steve, the last singer that we had, that did the last demo with us. He was a great singer, and he went on to do sing with Rockhead, with Bob Rock, and he toured with Bon Jovi, doing stadiums in Europe and whatnot. He was a really cool singer that we were really stoked on getting, but he ended up, I can't remember exactly why he left, but we were gonna do more with him, and then he just ended up bailing on us.
Yeah, I think he was in a band called Probe, but I remember that. I think, to the question, I think it's hard when you don't have a singer who's a permanent member of the band, because I think sometimes we kind of over-orchestrated all the other parts because there wasn't a singer who was thinking about melodies and thinking about that. So when Steve came along, it's like, wow, this guy can sing and he can write lyrics, he can arrange stuff. It was pretty eye-opening. I think there was a pretty big quantum leap there.
Yeah. When the band broke up, it was sort of like right at the breaking point where metal exploded and became huge. I mean, hair metal, different styles came about, death metal. But, by the mid-80s going to the late 80s, it was probably the biggest genre of music in the world. Did anybody ever sit back and scratch their head and say, why did we let this thing fall apart? Should we try again? Was there anything like that? Or did everybody just kind of get out of music at that time and move on to different bands or projects?
Well, I did get back together with Sandy briefly, probably late 85. I was shortly after I left Midnight Vice. This is Rob, by the way. I joined a band called Solon's Lair. We played around for about 6 months, recorded some demos, nothing major with that. But I always sort of regretted that it fell apart, and I was hoping that maybe, you know, we could restart it. But again, just somehow it just didn't materialize. It was sad because I think we had potential to do much more than we had already done.
And Sandy went on to claim in Pretty Boy Floyd.
Yeah, Midnight Vice split up, I was kind of on a break for 4 or 5 months and looking around for a band. And then I got called by these guys called Pretty Boy Floyd, not the LA guys, but Canadian guys. And so we did, we put out an album, we got in Kerrang and got it in the charts in the UK and opened for Skid Row and Sabotage and a few other bands and did quite well for ourselves. And then we got into a big legal battle with the LA band and it kind of put a wrench into the whole situation. But after that, I just soldiered on and kept on playing in other bands.
You know, when you think about it, is music more heartbreaking than enjoyable?
I would say
it's volatile at times.
Yeah, I mean, it's heartbreaking, I think, when you know, if you work at something really hard and, you know, you're on the cusp of something and then something gets, you know, a big wrench gets thrown into something and all your hard work kind of seems like it's for naught, but you kind of got to just brush it off and soldier on. I mean, if you're doing it for the love of music, then you'll just keep on going.
We have
a
lot of time, too.
I you know, 25 years later, I hear the band's back together. I mean, I think it's just Rob and Rick at this time, and then the Evanescence record comes out. Completely, in my opinion, different sound and record than what the band was 25 years before that.
Yeah, definitely. The only song on that had any kind of roots with the old days was a track called Mule, which is actually one of the ones Sandy and I kind of worked on back in 85, late 85, when we were, you know, planning on maybe trying to restart this thing. But we're actually recording some new material right now. We're well through the recording process. We're not finished yet, but it, I think, is a little bit more like Midnight Vice style. I think people will recognize that a bit more. And Sandy's back with us for this CD. So hopefully CD, should I say?
Yeah. Well, with the Evanescence record, I mean, were you looking to bring the band into a different direction? Because they just, you know, because when you think about it, a generation has passed. A lot of people who didn't know the band back then maybe are finding the band for the first time now. So, I mean, was it meant to be more of a modern sound the record? What was happening at the time?
Nothing was intentional in the sense of direction. It's just what we were sort of coming up with at the time. Yeah, it's different than our Midnight Vice style in the past, but I think we have a little bit more of a drive to get a little bit back to our original sound, closer anyways than we did on the last CD. So hopefully it'll work out and people will like it.
Yeah,
yeah. I think Evanescence has bits of stuff that you could hear going back in time. Like I think it sounds a little bit like kind of. There's elements of the song like Suspicion kind of in there. And I was thinking when you're asking the question about, you know, back in 83, there wasn't a lot of metal and stuff like that. But I think going back even earlier than that, Rob and I and Rod were big fans of, you know, AC/DC and the Angels and kind of that Aussie rock kind of sound, which maybe is a little bit more on Evanescence in some places.
True. I mean, it's kind of hard to recreate the past. I mean, you know, everybody's moved on. Different influences coming out of your life, sound, styles of music. You know, so is it a conscious effort to say, hey, let's go back maybe to, like, you know, Vice and Virtue and try to write that? Or is it just like, you know, everything that you've been through over the last three decades of being musicians and in music, and that's what the band is supposed to sound like today?
Well, yeah, definitely life influences the way we are. But we definitely, we do like what we did in the past, and I think there's more, well, there's more contribution from Rick on this latest project and Sandy as well, so I think it will have more of a Midnight Vice flavor to it than the last CD for sure.
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing that. But more importantly, right now, Full Disclosure out on Heaven and Hell Records, a compilation. When Jeremy told me he was going to be working with you guys and putting this together, I was excited. Because, like I said, being a fan of those demo days and having them, I was glad to hear what he was going to come up with. Because he puts out amazing packages. How did this whole thing come about that you hooked up with him and decided to put this compilation record out?
It came on a Facebook post that somebody had posted the cover of Speed Metal Hell. And I just made a comment. I said, oh, that's cool. That's my old band from high school days. I had a song in there. And then Jeremy happened to be in that group and said, oh, do you have any other demos or songs or whatever from that era? And I said, actually, yeah, my old guitar player, Rob, had just sort of saved all the old demos and digitally captured them and cleaned them up a bit and whatnot. And he goes, oh, okay. I'd be interested in actually hearing that. And so went back and forth a bit, and then I just said, well, why don't you talk to Rob directly, because he's the archivist. So Rob started talking to Jeremy, and I'll let Rob take it from there.
Yeah, I got hold of Jeremy, and I was basically interested in finding out what he wanted to actually achieve here with all this stuff. And I did have all the audio. Sandy, normally we had the written archives, so to speak, all the old information for that. But I had most of the audio that we had done through the years. And he was very interested in putting this stuff out and gathering up all kinds of information for the booklets and what have you. And so I said, yeah, absolutely. If this is what you want to do, I'm 100% in the band, would be definitely behind it. And we just gathered up the info, and Jeremy did a fantastic job putting this together.
Were they all unreleased songs from back in the day, or did you go back and put anything from the demo tapes on there? I know
most of it.
People know.
Yeah, this stuff was mostly released through the tape trading world. So I guess if somebody was really into us in the past, they would have heard the majority of this stuff here. But the sound, for the most part, has been maintained. So obviously, 35 years later, the quality of the recordings can deteriorate a little bit, but I think it survived to a listenable quality. I think it's turned out quite nice.
Yeah, it does sound good. I mean, think about how you record today compared to recording back then. Everything was on reel-to-reel tapes, on Ampeg tapes. Today it's pretty much all digital. I mean, which way do you prefer? Do you kind of like the way it was back then with the recording process on tape, or is the digital world, kind of the way to go right now?
Well, I think right now it's probably easier with the digital and the home studio environment. You can work on things at home and do the overdubs at your leisure. In the old days, you would more likely have to go into the studio as a band and put the bed tracks down as a band. Now, at least you have the flexibility to spend more time working on it. And Sandy's been doing a lot of this as well. I'm sure he agrees.
Yeah, I personally like the whole digital setup. The last few albums, band I'm with now, we've done on all our own, and you can get like album quality records out. Sound great, and without spending an arm and a leg. I mean, the only money we spent on our last couple of records is basically just on mixing and mastering. So
yeah,
you save a lot of money,
cool.
And it's a lot more convenient, and
absolutely, yeah.
And being old, you can fix a lot of your errors a lot easier.
I
hear
like
that part.
Yep.
I call it performance enhancement.
Performance enhancement. I like that. I mean, Rick, you see today bands, they don't even have to be in the same room, the same city, the same state, or the same country to record. Do you think that works well for a band where you can have members all over the place, send in tapes and mix it together? You still kind of prefer, where the guys get into a room together and they kind of hash out the songs and make them work?
Yeah, I think, I think Sandy and Rob probably do more recording than I do. But yeah, I think there's a lot. Rob saves me from a lot of my atrocious guitar playing by being able to to re-record and kind of redo it, but I think for sure you missed something about that that spontaneity and that kind of live off the floor kind of feel, which is just, you know, I don't know whether it's age or whether it's just so convenient to do everything digitally, but I think, yeah, sometimes you can miss out on stuff by having to do it that way. But I'm also the biggest Ed Wood type recording person, where it's like, yeah, that's great, that's fine, that's good enough, let's move on. Sounded good to me. So
too much.
Not the right one to ask, maybe.
Yeah. Well, with the new music, I mean, when can we expect it? I mean, is there something that's going to happen next year where we might get a new record?
Yeah, I mean, we're quite far along in the process, so we're planning to get it out during 2019. It's quite possible. I'd like to see it come out as soon as possible, but it is moving along. So yeah, within the year, I think we should be close to getting this stuff released.
That's going to be
fantastic. I want to clarify, we won't be working on a box set though. There'll be no Midnight Vice box set.
Hey, whatever you give us is going to be great. And guys, I'm going to have to cut you loose because I want to play some music. I'm going to close out today's show, but I can't thank you enough for taking the time to call in and be with me today. When you put out the new record, you come back on, we'll do this all again. And I want to wish you guys, you know, a happy holiday and a happy new year, and hopefully 2019 to see you guys right back up to the top again.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, thanks a lot for your report.
Anytime. Take care. Rob, Sandy, Rick, it was good talking to you today. Take care, guys.
You too.
Thanks. Bye now.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, let's get on some Midnight Vice. One or two more songs after that, we're going to wrap it up tonight. There's Vice.